We hope and trust that you will find this Torah in Motion program meaningful. Through these programs, Torah in Motion encourages discussion, debate, and education about the most important issues facing Jews and Judaism today. Together, we can focus on creating religious commitment through an honest and sophisticated encounter with topics that are relevant to being Jewish in the modern world. For more information about this and other Torah in Motion programs, please visit the website at www.torahinmotion.org.
There's some handouts. I don't think there are enough, but whoever has, maybe you can share some of the handouts together. Also, Jay,
do you have a watch? Someone have a watch?
There's some handouts. If you don't have a handout, so try and get near someone that has one. What I'd like to do is, first of all, I want to thank Rabbi Kelman for basically creating an institution and giving meaning to Tisha B'Av for our community. This is now many years, and I know people look forward to it instead of sitting around all day sleeping. This way we have a chance to learn and do something positive and bring people together. We appreciate that. What I'd like to do is talk about or look through some of the sources concerning the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. There's a lot of discussion. What are the reasons for the destruction of the temple in Jerusalem? The source is in the Navi. Is the prophets speak about it. So rather than look to other types of sources, I thought we would go through some of the sources of what the Nevi'im themselves say is the source of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. In particular, the first half is going to be taken from the prophet Zechariah. Zechariah, as we'll see in a moment, is approached and asked a question by the people in the Galut. The Navi describes that after the first temple was destroyed, the people went off to Babylonian, they came back. They came back in the Koresh, Cyrus the Great, gave permission for the Jewish people to come back to Yerushalayim, rebuild the temple. People came back led by Zerubbabel and Yoshua Kohen Gadol. They came back, and when they started to rebuild Yerushalayim, they met all sorts of resistance in the land. The people objected to it, sent word back to the king in Persia, and the king at the time, the Gemara says, was Achashverosh, said, must be a mistake. The Jewish people are a very loyal people. If they start to rebuild Yerushalayim or rebuild the temple, there's no question they will want to have autonomy back in the land. They'll rebel against me. Not a good idea. So therefore, I rescind the permission for the Jewish people to rebuild Yerushalayim, and he thwarted the effort. Then the Navi describes, a number of years later, Daryavash, the king, established the permission to rebuild Yerushalayim and rebuild the temple. Who was this Daryavash? So the Medrash says he was the child of Esther and Achashverosh. He was Jewish, apparently. So he gave permission to rebuild the temple, and they started again. This is 20 years later. So at that time, a delegation came from Bavel back to Yerushalayim, and in Yerushalayim at the time were Haggai and Zechariah and Malachi. They were the prophets, their last prophets. And they came back to Zechariah, and they said, we have a question for you. Do we still keep the fast of Tisha B'Av? because we're back in the land. Well, you're back in the land, they said. We're not back in the land. We're still back in Bavel. But you are back in the land, and you're rebuilding the Beis HaMikdash. They were 2 years into the process. So what do we do? Do we rebuild? Do we keep observing Tisha B'Av as a day of mourning or not? Or do we give up on it now? Now it's no longer a sad day. So in the course of Zechariah's answer, he takes two chapters to answer what is a simple, seems to be a simple question. He gives an insight into why the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed in the first place in the course of an answer. So if you take a look at the sources, what I'd like to do is I just want to read through some of the sources of what he says and to comment on them afterwards. This discussion is based on a shiur which Rabbi Liebtag has on the web, the virtual base matters that comes out of the Gush. He gives he posts various different shiurim. He's very creative, and some of the thoughts are based on his shiur. In particular, I want to tell you the answer before we get to the question and the psukim, and why I find this of interest. What Zechariah is going to say in the course of his answer, and we'll go through the psukim, is that the temple was destroyed because the people did not conduct themselves with mishpat and emes, with justice and with truth. That's what he gives as his answer. So I want to discuss later when we get to it what he means by that and what I think that means for us. In particular, the reason why it's of interest to me is both in terms of the meaning of what truth is, and I think some tendencies that we have to avoid the truth. And secondly, when it comes to mishpat, I have particular interest in justice because I have the honor, I guess, of being the secretary of the Beis Din in Toronto. I have the honor of hearing a lot of people's disputes, a lot of anger, a lot of destruction, a lot of things which are disappointing to see how people treat each other. And I have some comments about what I think is the basis of that and what we can do about that. I'm not going to tell you any confidentialities, but I'll give you some comments about that. Let's look in the psukim right at the beginning. If you have the sources here, we'll look in the source. If you don't, I'll translate as we go. We'll start right at the beginning. I'd ask for a volunteer reader, but I think it'll be easier for me to read. Let's start right at the beginning. V'hi b'shnas arba v'daryavish ha-melech. It's the fourth year of the king Daryavish. Hayad var Hashem al Zechariah ba'arba l'chodesh tshi v'kislev. The word of Hashem came to Zechariah. This is the fourth year of Daryavish, and the second year was when he gave permission to rebuild he went back to that original permission that Cyrus gave and told the people they were allowed to rebuild Jerusalem, rebuild the temple. And so this is 2 years later. They're 2 years into the project. It's going to take them 4 years to build the Beis HaMikdash, so they're halfway through. Vayishlach Beis El, Sar Eitzer V'Regim Melech Yanashav, L'chalot Es Pnei Hashem. And they sent off to Beit El, which here I think refers to Yerushalayim, two individuals to come to seek Hashem's word. Lemor lakonim sher leves Hashem tzvakos del nevim lemor ha'ev kevachodesh hachamishi hanazer kasher asisi zekama shanim. They came to the Kohanim that were in the Beis HaMikdash at the time and the prophets, and they asked them a question. Shall we cry in the fifth month? Should we do what it is that we've been doing these years, that we've been in exile observing Tisha B'Av? So it's unusual, first of all, to come to the Kohanim to ask a shaila. They came all the way from Bavel to Yerushalayim. That's a long way. They came all the way from Bavel, or Persia, to Yerushalayim to ask the Kohanim at the time for the answer to this question. That's an interesting thing. Why wouldn't they just ask the leaders in Bavel? Why not just ask the Talmid HaChacham? There were plenty of Talmid HaChachamim in Bavel. Why didn't they ask them, should we still observe this fast because now we're back in Yerushalayim? Why were they asking the the Kohanim, and in particular the Nevi'im. Why were they asking them that? So maybe they were asking them because they thought, I wonder if this effort's going to succeed. If the effort doesn't succeed, then we're in we're making an effort to come back to Yerushalayim, but who knows, maybe it won't work. Why'd they come now? Why didn't they come 20 years earlier when Koresh gave the original permission to rebuild Yerushalayim? They didn't come then because it didn't work then. When Zerubbabel and Yehoshua came back in the first return and they started to build to do their work, they weren't successful. So there's no question. You have to keep fasting on Tisha B'Av if you weren't successful in your return. So they come now because they want to ask the Navi, is this going to be success? Is this effort that we have now going to be successful? And if it is going to be successful, and we're already back in Yerushalayim, then I think we shouldn't fast anymore. I don't know if it's going to be successful, though. Maybe it won't. So they come back to ask the Navi in particular. So here's what Zechariah answers. The answer is, that he'll tell them in the end, is, you don't have to fast, but it takes them two chapters to get there. V'hi d'var Hashem t'kose lai lemor. Hashem's word came to me and said, Emor el kol am ha'aretz ve'lakonim lemor, ki tzamtam v'safod b'chamishi v'shvi, v'zeh shivim shana, hatzom samtuni ani. Hashem says to Zechariah, tell the people, when you fasted and you had eulogies in the fifth month and the seventh month for these 70 years, seventh month is referring to Tzom Gedalia, hatzom samtuni ani, what does that mean? The fast samtuni, what does samtuni mean? Did you make me fast? Is that what it means? Did you make me fast at that time as well? V'chitochlu v'kitishtu, halo atem ha'ochlim v'yatem ha'shotim. And when you eat and when you drink, you're the ones that eat and you're the ones that drink. So what's the answer he's giving him? So Hashem answers and says, you're asking me whether to fast? Did I fast these 70 years? By the way, do I eat and I drink? You're the ones who eat and drink, and you're the ones who fast. So Rabbi Liebtag explains this to mean, there are two different things. There's mitzvahs and there's minhagim. There's mitzvahs, that's what Hashem commands us to do. And then there's minhagim, there's customs that we have. He doesn't command us, we do them, because we want to do them. There's various different minhagim we have in the year. We dance on Simchas Torah with the Torah. There's no mitzvah to dance on Simchas Torah, it's not a mitzvah of the Torah. That's a minhag, because we want to dance with the Torah, so we dance with it. That's what we want to do. Not what he says for us to do, it's what we want to do. So on Shavuos, we stay up all night learning. Not because there's a mitzvah to do that, because that's what we want to do. We want to show our love of the Torah by doing that. So we have certain minhagim that we do, because we want to do them, not because we're commanded. So that's what Hashem answers back to the Jewish people. You want to know whether to fast? I didn't tell you to fast in the first place. You're the ones who wanted to fast, and so you're the ones who will decide whether you should not fast now. It's not up to me. It's up to you. What do you feel in terms of mourning or in terms of joy? Halo es edvarim asher kara Hashem b'yad nevim rishonim b'yos Yerushalayim yashev v'shalveh u'shlega. He says, I'm going to tell you the things that Hashem told you with the prophets originally. When Yerushalayim was sitting and was in its splendor and was peaceful, and everything and the land of Israel was inhabited. I'm going to tell you what the prophets said then, and you'll figure out now what you should do with this new return to Yerushalayim. V'hi devar Hashem el Zechariah lemor. So Hashem said to Zechariah the following. Ko amar Hashem tzvos lemor. Mishpat emes shafotu v'chesed v'rachamim asu ish es achiv. He says, this is what Hashem says. Mishpat, justice, emes, a justice of truth, you should judge. Chesed v'rachamim asu, and you should do kindness and mercy, each one to their fellow man. V'almana v'yasom ger v'yani al tashoku. And the widow and the orphan, the stranger, the convert, the poor person, don't take advantage of them. And the evil of each person, do not think one against the other in your heart. He's relating what it was that the Nevi'im said to the Jewish people when they were in the land. They're coming back now. But he says, I want to remind you what the Nevi'im said back then when you were living peacefully. They said to you, be a people of justice, be a people of kindness, and treat the poor and the misfortune, the ones who have misfortune, with kindness. And don't think evil one to another. V'yimanu lakshiv, you didn't listen. V'yidnu kosev sororis, you turned your back on me. V'yosnehem hichbidu mishmo, you didn't even listen. V'libam samu shamir mishmo es hator v'yasadvarim asher shalach Hashem tzvakos brucho b'yad nevi'im arishonim. And you turned your back and you didn't want to listen. You made your hearts like stone for listening to anything that Hashem had said to you. So I got very angry at that time because you didn't listen to what I said back then. He says, just like I called and you didn't listen, so you call, I'm not going to listen either to what you're asking me now. So at that time, I scattered you out of the land, into lands that you didn't know, and the land became desolate, and people coming and going, there was no one there, the land became desolate. That's what happened back then. So why is Zechariah telling him this, telling the people this? They came with a simple question, do we fast on Tisha B'Av or not? So what's he answering them? He says, you're asking me the wrong question. When you come back to Yerushalayim, what's the question you should be asking me? Not that we fast on Tisha B'Av, but why did we fast on Tisha B'Av in the first place? And how should we act now to make sure that we don't have to fast on Tisha B'Av again? What happened? Don't ask me whether to fast. Ask me why we had to fast in the first place. And I'll tell you how you should act now so you'll avoid fasting again in the future. And there won't be a Tisha B'Av that you'll have to fast. So you know what I said to you back then? I said to you to act in truth. I said to you act in justice and to take care of your fellow man. And you didn't do it. So by implication, Zechariah is saying, so do it now. Make sure now that you're back in the land, you do it. That's the proper thing to be asking. The next parak, Ches, page 2. V'hi devar Hashem sfos lemor, ko amar Hashem sfos, he says, I have very great feeling for Tzion, for Yerushalayim, and because of that, I had very tremendous anger when things didn't work out. Hashem says, I'll come back to Tzion, I'm not going to dwell in Yerushalayim. V'nikra Yerushalayim ir ha'mes, v'har Hashem tzvakos har ha'kodesh. And Yerushalayim is going to be called the city of truth. And the mountain of Hashem is going to be called a holy mountain. So what does he mean it's going to be called a city of truth? Who's going to make it a city of truth? Him? He's going to make it truth? Hashem doesn't make the truth. We are the ones that make the truth. He says, when you come back to Yerushalayim, I want it to be a city of truth. I want you to be truthful people, one to another. And I want the mountain in Yerushalayim to be a mountain of Kedusha, of holiness. I'll make it holy by allowing you to build a base of Mikdash, but that's not what makes it holy. You're the ones who make it holy by the way that you act in it. And then one of the great, most beautiful of all of the Nevuahs in all of Tanakh, Ko Amar Hashem Tzvakos, Od Yeshuas Kenim Skenos, Berachovos Yerushalayim, V'ish Mishanto V'yadom Arov Yamim. He says, there will be a day in which there will be elderly men and elderly women in the streets of Yerushalayim, and they'll be walking with canes because they'll be so elderly. That's a beautiful thing. The people in Yerushalayim will live long lives. Having elderly people in Yerushalayim is a bracha, it's a blessing. And that'll be a great day in which people walk with canes in Yerushalayim. Rechavos ha'ir yimalu yaladim yaledos mitzachakim b'rechavoseha. And the cities of the streets of the city are going to be filled with little boys and little girls, and they're going to be playing in the streets. In other words, it's going to be a city of peace, and it's not going to be a city where people are afraid to go outside. Ko amar Hashem tzvakos, hineni moshia samim me'eretz mizrach, Mi'eretz Mavoa Shemesh. I'm going to redeem my people from the east and from the west. Ve'hevesi osam v'shafnu v'tok Yerushalayim. I'm going to bring them. They're going to dwell in Yerushalayim. V'hayu li la'am v'ani lehem l'alokim v'emes uv'tzedakah. And they're going to be a people for me. I'm going to be their God in truth and in justice. He says the same thing again. Why does he mention in truth and justice, I'm going to bring the people back to Yerushalayim? But it sounds like it's a condition. On the condition that they be a people of truth and of justice. Not going to be a people who are going to treat each other improperly. Ko amar Hashem Tzvakos. Listen very strongly, take into your hands what I'm telling you. When the Beis HaMikdash was still standing, back in those times, the things were so bad that there was no one to hire. There were no animals to be able to rent out. There was no peace from the enemies. And every person was against each other. And now, it's not going to be like those first days. It's going to be different now in the second time. The land's going to give its fruit. Hashamayim yitnu talam. There's going to be dew coming from the heavens. V'hisnachalti asheri sa'amazeh es kol eilem. And this people are going to get all of this. The people that come back. V'ayaka asheri yisim klala b'goyim. The top of the next column. Beis Yehuda, Beis Yisrael, ken oshiyaschem v'yisim bracha al tirod techezakna yedechem. All of this is going to come to you, but on the following conditions. Ki ko amar Hashem Tzvakos kasher zamamti lahara lachem v'aksiva voseichem osi amar Hashem Tzvakos lo nechamti. Back then when I got angry with you, I didn't give up. It was hard for me to give up on that anger. Ken shavti zamamti b'yamim ha'ele. But I also have, just as I had a plan then, I have a plan now. Lehitivis Yerushalayim v'es Yehuda al tira. Don't be afraid, it's going to be good for Yerushalayim. Ela hadavarim asher tasu, and this is what you have to do to make it good now, the way I want it to be. Dabru emes ish es reyu, emes umishpat shalom, shiftu b'sharechem. Speak truth, everyone to his neighbor. Everyone should speak truthfully to each other. And there should be emes umishpat shalom, shiftu b'sharechem. Pasuk quoted in Pirkei Avos. Truth and justice of peace, you should judge in your gates. The ish es ras reyo al tashuva b'lavavchem, ushu asheker al te'avu, ki es kol eile asher senesi nu'am Hashem. And everyone, don't speak bad about your neighbor, don't think bad in your hearts, and don't take oaths against other people. I don't want these things, says Hashem. And then he gives the answer to his question. They asked him at the beginning, do we fast in the Tisha B'Av or not? Finally, he gets to the answer. The fast of the fourth month, the fifth month, the seventh month, the tenth month. They are going to be days of gladness and the Yom Tov, days of happiness. V'ha'emes v'ha'shalom ehavu. Truth and peace, love. Love, truth, and peace. Again, those last three words don't fit. If this is finally the answer to the question. They said to him, do we fast on Tisha B'Av? And the answer is, all the fasts are going to be days of gladness. They're not going to be fast anymore. Do love, truth, and peace. Doesn't fit. Why is that there? It's a condition. He's saying you want them to be days of happiness, then you've got to have truth, and you have to have peace. If you don't have the truth and the peace, then I'm not sure that there are going to be days of gladness. So that's Zechariah's answer. He was asked a question. So he answers two parts of the question. First of all, this return to the land of Israel, he says, is going to be forever, for a long time. It's going to be successful. It's not going to be like that aborted attempt 20 years ago when the people came back and they started to build the base of Mikdash and they were at all sorts of objection. That's not going to happen this time. This time, it's going to be successful. But the way it's going to be successful is, what about that we always hear, that the base of Mikdash was destroyed, the first temple, because of murder, because of idol worship, because of immorality? He doesn't say any of that. What about that? Why doesn't he mention that? You have other sources in Tanakh where it tells you other reasons why the base of Mikdash was destroyed. You have the story of Menashe, which I have here as well, where they're told different things. They're told the temple is going to be destroyed because of much more dramatic things than not speaking truth. Much more dramatic things than not having justice and not dealing kindly one with another. But he says here that if you want to make this return to the land of Israel successful and you want this to be a day of simcha, then I'm not going to... He doesn't mention those other things. He doesn't say clean up your hands from blood. He doesn't say don't have murder in the land. Obviously, you don't have murder in the land. But he doesn't emphasize that. He emphasizes, I guess what you would say, much more humble and personal things. Truth, peace, speak gently one to another, don't harbor ill will one to another, and pursue justice. These are the things that he says. But he's not the only one to say this. Zechariah could not say this had he not had previous support for saying this. Where are the other Nevi'im? Where do the other Nevi'im say similar things? So the prophet Yirmiyahu says the same thing, amongst other things, but he also emphasizes a similar thing. If you look in the next source, this is still on page 3, in the shaded part. We'll start in Pasuk Dalet. Yirmiyahu says to the people, Al tivtechu lachem el divrei hasheker lemor. Don't trust in falsehood, saying, Heichal Hashem, Heichal Hashem, Heichal Hashem Hema. Don't trust in falsehood and say, this is Yirmiyahu before the destruction. Don't trust in falsehood and say, oh, that temple of Hashem, that's the temple of Hashem. That's Hashem's building. Meaning what? What does he mean by that? Don't trust in that. What could happen to the God's temple, the Beis HaMikdash? How could that ever be destroyed? Don't tell me it's going to be destroyed. That couldn't be destroyed. That's Hashem's house. So Yirmiyahu says, don't say that. That's a bunch of lies. It could be destroyed too. You don't live in absolute security. That could happen. Verse, hey, ki im heitiv teitivu esdarchechem yasmalechem. Unless you improve your ways, if you would do justice, ben ishu ben reyu, between people, ger yasom v'almana lo tashoku, and the convert, the stranger, the widow and the orphan and the widow, don't take advantage of them, v'damnaki al tishbuchu b'makom hazeh, and don't spill innocent blood in this place. V'achrei Elohim acherim lo telchu l'ra lachem. And don't go after other gods. He mentions idol worship as well, but he mentions first that you should make sure that you have justice and you speak kindly one to another and you take care of the innocent people. Skip down to Tet. Haganov ratzo v'na'af v'hishaveh l'sheker v'kater l'bal. V'haloch achrei Elohim acherim asher li yadatem. He says, you have thieves, murderers, people of immorality. They swear falsely. They serve other gods. They go after other gods that you shouldn't even know. And then they come and they stand in front of me and they call out my name in this building. He says, how could that be? Which is, again, one of the famous comments of the Nevi'im, is they always comment on inconsistency and the fact that people do one thing and do another at the same time and act religiously on the outside and not so much on the inside. So this is support also in Yirmiyahu for the exact same thing that Zachary was saying. Just want to look at one more on the next page and then make some comments. Next page, page 4. Yirmiyahu says again in chapter 8, verse number 8, how can people say we are wise people? The Torah of Hashem, Hashem's Torah is with us. Achen hine la sheker asa. Eight sheker sofrim. He says, what do you mean? You guys do lies. Your pen is a pen of falsehood. You write things that are false. Hovishu chachamim, chatu v'yelakedu. Hine b'dvar Hashem masu v'chachmas melehem. He says, and the people object against the wise people. They put them to shame, as maybe they should if they're people who speak falsehood. And the Devar Hashem, the word of Hashem people despise, because look at those leaders. Look at those wise men. If those wise men are the ones who are speaking falsehood, then why should we respect them? So this is the these are some of the sources which Zechariah, of course, was well aware of, that Yirmiyahu himself criticized the people for this kind of falsehood. So I want to just make a couple of comments on what this means. The other sources I have copied here, the next one, Perek Tes, is actually today's Haftorah that we read this morning. And the one at the bottom of the page is the story from Malachim of Menashe, in which Menashe is told in his time that he was an evil king, and he was told in his time that the Beis HaMikdash was going to be destroyed because of his evil, which was all sorts of different running to sorcerers and running to idols and building bamot and doing basically all that you could do that would be wrong. He was doing, and he was told the Beis HaMikdash would be destroyed because of those things. And yet, Zechariah doesn't emphasize those. He emphasizes truth, and he emphasizes falsehood. So I want to make a couple of comments on what this means. What does he mean by truth and falsehood? You have what I would call uppercase truth and uppercase falsehood, and then you have lowercase truth and lowercase falsehood. Uppercase is lies. It's when people lie outright, cheat. Cheat in business, deny whether or not they've said what they've said. That's one element of falsehood. But there's another element of falsehood which I think is more of what we're all involved in. Just as we all emphasize Lashon Hara on Tisha B'Av, that everyone is involved in speaking ill of their fellow man, the area of truth and falsehood is an area I don't know whether or not you think of these things, but I don't think it's something that we emphasize a lot. And very often, saying things that are not true are a defense mechanism. If we do something which is wrong, we don't want to admit it because we want to protect protect ourselves. If we do something, if we don't in a work situation, we don't do the work that we were supposed to do. So we say we lie. We say we did it because we want to protect ourselves. The source of speaking falsehood very often in our day-to-day life is defense. It's like the sitcoms. You know the old sitcoms. Today, of course, we're not supposed to admit that we watch sitcoms. But the old sitcoms, you know, I Love Lucy and Jackie Gleason, they were all built on the same thing. They would do something wrong, and then they would lie to their wife or their partner or their friend or whatever, so that they, and then it would get worse, and then it would get worse, and the whole thing would snowball till, you know, very humorous at the end in trying to hide what was the truth. But all of the great comedies were based on was lying. If you lie to protect yourself, there's a very good musar in many of them too. If you lie to protect yourself, usually you get in worse trouble in the end. But people don't want to tell the truth because it's embarrassing. And we hide the truth because we want to protect ourselves. And then it gets worse and worse. And So the source of sheker and the source of not wanting to speak the truth is coven, is our view of our honor. We want to protect our prestige. We want to protect our image in the eyes of others so that others will live blissfully ignorant of who we really are. And because we feel somehow that admitting the truth, even if we've made a mistake, if it's a business situation and we didn't do the work that we ought to have done, so that's the truth. If it's in a family situation and we've done something which we ought not to have done, so that's the truth. That's what it is. And the more that we protect ourselves, usually the worse it gets. There's, I don't want to comment on this, but sometimes we have that as well. The older generation used to do this when it came to health, troubles, difficulties. Used to have this notion that we want to protect people from the truth. We want to protect. We don't want to tell them the truth. And so we would protect them from the fact that someone was ill, and the illness would get worse. And then finally, when they found out, what was the reaction when the person found out that their relative was ill and they didn't know about it? They resented it so much. They do resent it. It happens today too. People resent it so much. They say, I can't trust you. You don't tell me the truth. You hid this from me all this time to protect me. Protecting ends up being worse in the end, causes greater pain. Sometimes what we think is protection is worse. That's in the area of emes, in the area of truth. The one area of truth in which I find in our own community that people are the great, great champions of truth is when they have disputes with someone else and they want the other person's lies and cheating to be exposed. Oh, then we become the champions of truth. Truth then must be known because the other guy is not truthful, and we must, of course, expose their lack of truth. So I deal with a lot of disputes. And, you know, I don't have that much experience, but as time goes on, I think we all realize that in two different areas, the world is a circle, it's a globe, and everything comes around to everyone eventually. One area is in the area of challenges in life. You know, if 10% of the population have heart disease, and 10% are afflicted with this illness, and 10% have financial failures, and 10%, well, if you add it up, you know, everyone eventually is confronted in their lives with serious challenges. Everyone is going to have that in their lives. And on the other hand, everyone has disputes. Everyone has situations which are difficult situations. Whether they're small disputes or whether they're large disputes, and whether it's financial things, business things, or disputes in a shul, weren't treated properly, often is true. Often we are treated properly in shuls. Often in schools we're not treated properly too. That happens. We always have the choice as to how to deal with it. From my viewpoint, when I see disputes, I mentioned I run the Besdin in town. So 100 cases a year, maybe 75, 100 of serious cases where people have finally taken the step that they want to come and have it addressed in a Jewish court in a Beis Din. So I always see the same thing. I hear one side, the person who calls with the dispute. I say, gee, I don't even think this needs to go to a Beis Din, a court. It's so obvious that you're right that I don't say that. Used to say that when I started out, but now I know better. It's so obvious that you're right, that this, you've got a very good point. And then, of course, when the other side gets the letter saying that they have to come to the Besdin, they call with their version of the story, say, you know, I think you're right too. And so, but if you ask either party, they would feel so definitive that my point of view is the absolute truth and there is none other. And so the other person is a scoundrel. So it's interesting that the image that you have, where the source is, I guess is a Greek source, of the scales of justice. It's a very good image, because in every dispute, in every situation that we're involved in, whether it's in our family, whether it's in business, whether we bring it to a court or we don't, there is truth on both sides. There's always truth on both sides. And some truths outweigh the others. Sometimes the way we view it is not the way it's going to work out in the end in terms of what's fair and what's just. But we have to look at the issues. So for us as individuals, very often, disputes that we have, which we allow to fester, and whether, again, it's disputes with schools, with shuls, with organizations, with friends, with business, with people who have let us down, it happens all the time. It's going to happen to all of us. No one's immune from that. It'll happen to everyone. So we, again, use a certain defense mechanism in looking for truth. And in this is the area that we should let go of truth. The expression the Navi has is Mishpat Shalom. You should have justice, a peaceful justice. That is very difficult to ever have in a dispute, because people hold on to their views in a way that really is a protection. We don't really want to know the truth of the other person's claim. We just want to protect ourselves and win. We just want to win. We have to, I think that's in the area of Mishpat Shalom, the only way that you ever have Mishpat Shalom is peace and justice, is if people are willing to accept something which is not their opinion, is not their view. It's willing to accept that maybe the just thing is that I have to suffer in this, suffer whatever I think is the wrong that's been done to me. I think this is what the Navi is speaking about. We have self-protection and self-justification and jealousy of others, disdain for others. We all feel this. And if we want to have a world of truth, it should be the truth that comes from our mouths, not the truth that we demand from others. And we need to have mishpat, we need to have a sense of justice towards others, as well as in disputes. I see also another comment that this issue of truth is communally is sometimes not addressed as well. That we sometimes, this used to be, Rabbi Tursky championed this, it used to be in areas of abuse, spousal abuse, other areas in which we did not want to admit the truth. And the reason we didn't want to admit the truth was we wanted to protect the Torah. Because if we have a Torah that makes us live better, but some of us don't live better, then I guess our Torah doesn't work. Which is not true. That's not proper thinking. The Torah makes people better, doesn't make them perfect. Makes people better. Maybe it makes some people who would have been really rotten, not quite so rotten, but it doesn't make us perfect. And I think in the area of emes, the area of truth, as a community sometimes we protect our Jewish community at the expense of the individuals and the hurt that it would cause to individuals. I think in the areas that we've admitted this is in special education for children. The areas we admitted is starting to have some awareness of abuse situations. The areas where we haven't yet admitted it in an honest way is drug use. Tragedies happen because of the availability of drugs. Because we want to protect the kids. We want to protect the kids who are involved. We don't want to admit it. We don't want to admit publicly the truth of what's going on. But we suffer as a result. I want to just mention also the appropriateness of the funeral this week of David Rosenzweig, and what he stood for in the Kiddush Hashem that unfortunately his death caused in these areas of honesty and integrity. I had the good fortune when I first came to town that David Rosenzweig had done the accounting for Stephen Cohen, who was the rabbi in the shul. So Stephen said, call up David Rosenzweig, he'll do your accounting for free. As a clergy, whatever. So he used to do that for me, which I felt was, after a couple of years, I felt it was not fair to him. So we stopped doing that. But sometimes the tragedies bring out what a person should do in giving, in honesty, in integrity, and in pursuing the straight. I would just say in terms of his example, and what I think is a failure often in the Orthodox community, in the Frum community. There's an image of being straight and squeaky clean. You know, kind of the goody-goody, the person who keeps all the laws, I mean, mitzvahs, but also the laws of the land. He's honest in taxes, honest in business, straight and reliable in whatever they say, not looking for any way to get ahead by usurping the laws, not keeping the laws. This is what he stood for in terms of my own experience with him. And I think it's sometimes in our firm world, because we justify by saying, well, you know, day school tuition is so expensive, you know, taxes, I don't need to do so much. I'll just, you know, sign here even though it's not true. This is something which I think the Navi speaks out against. This kind of having two different aspects to our religious life. This is not right. And it's not what we should be trying to pursue. I think what we should be trying to pursue is exactly what Zechariah says, what Yirmiyahu says too. Yirmiyahu says it's the people before the destruction. Zechariah says it's the people after the destruction, telling them, if you want to keep this place and you want to be successful in Yerushalayim, Emes, Mishpat, Shalom, try and be a good, squeaky, clean, straight person of honesty and integrity and mitzvahs and learning and everything else that we pursue in terms of our religious life, in terms of our neshamas. But we need to be just really good people. That's what we should be trying to be. And I think that's exactly what Zechariah says to the people when they came and they said to him, should we fast on the on Tisha B'Av? He said to Hashem answers and says, whether you fast or not is up to you. I don't, you know, you didn't ask me to fast. That's up to you. But what I will tell you, Hashem says, is have emes, truth. Don't speak lies. Don't speak untruth. And pursue justice, mishpat, and pursue shalom. That, Hashem says, is the reason why you fasted in the first place. And that's what you should do on your Tisha B'Av so that you don't fast in the future. Thank you.
Okay, we'll take a 4 minute and 3 quarters break this time, and we'll start with Rabbi Michalowicz.